What's good, everybody? Welcome to 808s and Ankle Breaks, episode 47. I'm the co-editor-in-chief of the Amherst Wire, Jonathan Kerma. With me is my other host,
Trevor Wilson, entertainment editor for the Amherst Wire, a.k.a. Chef Boyardee. We're back. It's October, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 47.
So today we're going to hit you with the slapper skip per usual. Then we actually have a special guest with us today, Chris Focus, Amherst rapper. And, you know, we'll be kind of talking diss tracks today, specifically starting it with, you know, Dame vs. Shaq, if you guys didn't hear about that diss track. And then kind of moving further into diss tracks in general. And then we're going to talk a little bit of preseason, as well as Daryl Morey and the Rockets versus China. And then we'll get out of your ears. So let's get started with slapper skip.
Let's do it.
If you're new here, I say this every week, but like, I forgive you, I guess, if you don't know what slapper skip is. It's the weekly segment where we take the hottest singles of the week, we give it a slap if we like it, a skip if we don't, a meh if it's in between, a super if it's over either one. So let's do it. Trevor, first on the list, we got Travis Scott, Highest in the Room. What'd you think of it, Trev?
You know what? I'm gonna give this a meh. This is this is an outtake from Astroworld, and I think it's pretty clear why. There's really nothing in this. I mean, you know, I think he gives you the standard instrumental. Like, he's got that really nice up-tempo guitar in the background. The drums are nice and bouncy, but like, there's nothing here. There's nothing new here. Nothing new here from Travis. So, yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it was also a meh for me. I thought it was a mid. For Travis, it was a mid. Like, you know, there's anything per se that's like bad about it, but it's, as you said, it's kind of just standard what we expected. It reminds me of like when you released Green and Purple last year,
right?
And Butterfly
just
Effect,
like
where it's like a bunch of throwaways. I will say the outro is kind of cool, straight off of Astroworld, where it's got that kind of like trippiness vibe where you feel like you're in the skies. Next, we got Dave East featuring Jacquees. Is it Jacquees?
Jacquees,
yeah, whatever. Alone. What'd you think of this one, Trev?
I'm gonna give this a meh, only because it's not really my cup of tea, but I love the sample that they have on this. I think it's a Jodeci track, is that? Yeah.
Yeah, it samples Jodeci Feeling.
Yeah, so I love the bounce to it. It's got a great vibe to it. Dave East, he's all right, but I think Jacquees really steals the show here. I think he provides some great vocal support for Dave East. And the hook, he kills the hook. Love the hook on this thing, but not really something I could say I'm going to come back to a whole lot. So.
I gave it a meh as well. I think the biggest thing you got to take away from this, it's clearly like an R&B track for, you know, putting it down in the bedroom. So, like, I mean, when I was listening to it, I wasn't putting it down in the bedroom. So that might have affected the vibes of it. But I think, you know, Dave East on this track, as you said, he did solid. I think the hook, there isn't enough to really, like, grab me. Like, it's not like Jacquees's vocals are bad, but just the simple line of, you know, I can't leave you alone, like, that doesn't do it for me. Maybe it does it for the ladies, I don't know. But next we got...
It's the voice, man.
I guess.
It's the voice.
I guess. Next we got Gucci Mane featuring Megan Thee Stallion, Big Booty. What'd you think of this one, Trev?
Oh, man, bro. This is a slap.
Bro,
slap.
We need to stop.
This is a banger. This is a banger.
Bro, we need to stop matching on these picks, but you keep going.
I'm sorry, bro.
I'm trying to get some, like, first take
this
level
song,
arguments.
This is only a slap because of Megan Thee Stallion. Like, she bodies this song, bro. She kills it. Her verse is insane.
This the type of, no, I come home, he washing dishes.
Yeah, that one,
she's
that
got
one
the,
killed me.
Her booty's so big me, that Moneybagg yo's at home. He's literally at home
dishes.
Washing dishes. He's like, oh, Meg's about to be home. I see her in the driveway. Like, that's crazy. I agree. Also, a slap. The beat is very, the best way I can explain it is very cowabunga, very, very surfer type. But then they put some 808s on top
guitar,
of it.
Yeah.
Very, very dope vibe. So it's a slap. I mean, it's nothing like, it's not going to make you really think lyrically, but you can turn up to this. You can definitely party to it. So it's a slap for me as well. Hopefully we disagree on one of these. Next we got Rex Life Raj featuring Russ. Fallen, what'd you think of this one, Trev?
I'm going to skip this one. Pretty generic. Like, I don't know. Like, there's just nothing here that Rex Life does really to stand out for me. I think his singing is all right. I think he sings really well on the track. But Russ does nothing. He's here for, like, I think, like, 8 lines, and then he's gone. He doesn't add anything to this song, anything at all. So I feel like it's just a pointless feature, I feel like. Yeah. Rex Life should have just taken it himself.
I gave this a meh. I mean, it's more M-E-H. The same from Rex Life Raj, where it's, you know, he's got this tranquil instrumental going on. I didn't hate Russ as much as you did. I thought he at least sounded, I think, good on the beat.
Oh, he sounded good,
but
yeah,
there was no
sure.
crazy lyrics. Like, the most memorable lyric he had was "braids in a fro, like I'm dating two women," and I was like, I don't know how I feel about you saying that. Like, either way, it's a meh.
Bro, this is slap.
It was so bad. It was skip. That was a skip.
Fair enough. Next we got off of Danny Brown's latest album, You Know What I'm Saying, Savage Nomad. Trevor, you picked this one.
Yeah.
Why'd you choose this one out of the album?
This is my personal favorite. Fair enough. Off of You Know What I'm Saying. So I'm hitting it with a super slap.
All right.
I love the beat on this, first and foremost. I think I love the build up the most of it. Like, I don't think you really expect the 808 to come in the way it does, especially since most of the production on this, it sounds pretty filtered, pretty old school. I mean, it was exec produced by Q-Tip.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is my favorite track on the album for sure. Danny Brown's just got this really just sick, infectious flow the whole time, throughout the whole album too. So I think if I had to give people a snapshot of You Know What I'm Saying in a song, it would be Savage Nomad.
Fair enough. I'm going to give it a slap. I don't have a whole lot to add. I'm just going to highlight the one line. I ignore a whole like an email out from LinkedIn. Not LinkedIn. LinkedIn. Is how he pronounced it. So that was kind of fire how he said that to kind of rhyme it with the other bars there. So yeah, it's a slap for me. Lastly, we got Summer Walker featuring P&D, Jess Might, from her latest album.
Over It.
Over It. What do you think, Trevor?
I'm going to give this one a slap, too. I mean, yeah, you got to be talented to make Party Next Door come out of wherever he's been hiding, bro.
Right.
But I really love the buildup on this track. Starts out really slow, and I think Summer Walker matches the mood really well. She's got these really gloomy keys in the background to drive it. And then when she comes in on the hook, it's just, boom, this explosion. But you're still feeling some type of way, you know? And I think she fits the rest of the theme of the album very well with Just Might. Yeah, Party Next Door, he adds a little bit to it. I'm curious if he produced this, but I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I love the track. I'm going to give it a slap. And I got to listen to the rest of the Summer Walker album.
That's I'm going to be honest here. I've listened to this song twice, and I enjoyed it, but I don't have enough to say about it. I just remember the one line, "I might be a which was, I don't know why I thought it was so funny that she kept saying that on the hook, but it was kind of funny. But that concludes our slap or skip. We're going to move on to our main segment. Joining us is Amherst rapper Chris Focus.
Hello, hello.
How you doing, my dude?
I'm chilling out. Always good.
So what you been up to, Chris? This is going to be a full interview. We're going to kind of go into discussion, but I haven't talked to you in a minute. What you been doing?
Really just a lot of music, like a ton of music. I've been writing hours and hours every day. Just haven't gotten a chance to record yet because my engineer, he's like gone in Memphis, person I record with. So I've just been like stacking the material. I've written about like pretty much a full album and then like a mixtape in the past like 2.5 weeks.
Okay.
So it's been a lot of work. It's been fun.
Yeah. When can we expect something new from you?
That's actually, I just came under new management, which is really exciting, but me and him have to talk that out and kind of plan it out strategically, so I don't want to say anything yet. I will say definitely like a lot of drops within this year.
All right.
Like a lot of drops, like definitely applying pressure, music videos, shooting, like it's gonna pick up pace.
Yep, sounds good. Yeah, if you want to like actually learn about Chris, because this is, as I said, we're not doing an interview. I did an interview with Chris over the summer. You can kind of check that out with the Valley Advocate if you want to get to know Chris more. But we're going to talk about some diss tracks today.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
Shaq.
First and foremost,
most importantly.
So NBA Hall of Famer Shaquille O'Neal and Damian Lillard have gotten into the
so
rapper,
wild,
the rapper and basketball beef. Like, this is how. This also happened earlier in the year with Dame and who was it before? Marvin Bagley. He had some diss tracks.
Yeah.
They went back and forth. But this is
not
Big
the
Diesel.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the magnitude of this is much, much bigger. As big as I guess NBA diss tracks can get.
Yes.
This all started when Dame Lillard, he went on the Joe Budden podcast. And, you know, on the Joe Budden podcast, they coax you to say a lot of things. So Dame went ahead and said that he's a better rapper than Shaq, which, if you ask me, like, that's just facts.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong.
I didn't know it was an argument.
He's not wrong at all.
Like, Shaq is a better entertainer, but, I mean, Dame is probably just bar for bar a better rapper. But Shaq didn't feel too good about that, so he decided to drop a diss track on Instagram. talking about Dame being broker than him, obviously, never winning an MVP, as well as never being as good as Westbrook and Steph, and even went as far to with this line, talking like you're Bron and you ain't even Trevor Ariza, which I thought was like, that was disrespectful both to Dame and Trevor Ariza.
That's
like,
a reach.
What did Trevor Ariza do, though? Like,
that's a reach.
What did Trevor Ariza do to get, like, to be the bottom of the simile? You know what I mean? Like, he didn't do anything to deserve that at all. But Dame clapped back with two tracks on SoundCloud. First, he had Rain Rain Go Away, where he kind of low-key put a body on
that track. Was fire. That was fire.
Yeah, Rain Rain Go Away was crazy.
That was fire.
Kind of like the Cavs ain't really need Diesel's ass. And even in Miami, won that on the strength of Flash. Like, he had a couple bars where, you know, obviously he was ring-checking Shaq, where it's like, yeah, you got four, but everyone loves to, anytime someone goes to Shaq, they love to pull out the line that, you know, Kobe and D-Wade got him the ring, so you know he had to go there. Also, another one, he said, said that Max was little, that 250 million crispy, can't recall you getting that when I was cruising on a 10 speed, or when you was cruising on a either way, he's saying he's got a $250 million deal. I don't know if Shaq ever got a $250 million deal. Just because the NBA, the way it's expanded in terms of, you know, how much salary cap they're getting in. So that was a nice little
check. Well, I mean, Shaq was, like, one of the first guys that really, like, broke through that, like, pay barrier
NBA.
Like, he had, like, one of the first, like, major contracts.
Right, right. So, yeah, but in terms of the contract comparison, Dame technically if you just look at the raw numbers, Dame made more.
Yeah.
Even though, obviously...
He made $250 million. Like,
that's
when you really think about
Shaq is probably still richer because he's like a tycoon at this point. Yeah. But like, I get what Dame's saying. Like,
off
don't...
ball though, like straight off ball, Dame made. That's a lot of money just off ball.
Yeah.
No trash.
And that's just
shoes
this is current contract. You know what I mean? Like, he still had contracts before and he's gonna get contracts after. So in terms of the net worth on the court, I don't know the exact numbers right now because I'm gonna be honest with y'all, I didn't do the research for this. But I think it's closer than Shaq's making it seem. That's all I'm gonna say.
I need to make that a drop for
I didn't do the research.
I did my research on this.
I will say the funniest line I thought in that song was the one where like Shaq in the disc he dropped on Instagram, he talked about going platinum and Damian was like, "You went platinum because you bought all the records." I was like, he opened with that. I was like, "That's
And then Shaq, he clapped back, I think, yesterday. So who knows? This beef could still be going on as we speak. But Shaq dropped a second round knockout where he flipped Puff and Biggie's victory, where he literally just ripped Biggie's flow on it. But, like, we're not going to talk about that. Got a lot more violent. I think at one point he said Dame has, like, a camel toe as well. Like, he was getting a lot more disrespectful, where you could tell Shaq was salty. Like, it's like where you and your boy, like, you guys are making jabs for fun, but then, like, you hit him a little too hard on one of them, so he starts trying to really dig at you and get you, like, where it hurts. I think it needs to be discussed. Like, I think Shaq, like, I know he's Superman and all that, but I think he's a sensitive motherfucker.
He is sensitive.
Oh, yeah.
He is very,
very
sensitive.
100%.
If you watch Inside the NBA, that dude, anytime Charles Barkley says, like, Charles Barkley takes all these jokes about not having rings, but if Chuck says one thing about Shaq, that's when Shaq starts trying to go in. Like, you can go on YouTube and just watch some of them. He just gets so mad so quick.
Y'all notice how Kobe said he was lazy, like, what, 12 years ago, something like that? Yeah. Every time somebody says something about Shaq that's good, he's like, "Must be so lazy, aren't I?" Like, he's still mad about that.
Yo, Shaq's about to drop a diss track on the show just because you called him sensitive.
For sure.
Tell him I got him.
Honestly,
I got him.
We got real rappers in the studio. So come at us, Shaq. Chris can handle that. Like, I'm gonna sit that. I'm gonna sit out. But Chris can handle
it. Kerm can handle that.
They don't know.
Let's stay professional, I guess.
But so my first question for you guys is, I guess we'll start with who won this beef, in your opinions.
Dame.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Dame, too, just because, I mean, pound for pound, like... Pun not intended, but pound for pound, Dame... is just, like, such a far better rapper.
Yeah.
Like, and you're right about Shaq's second diss track, where it's really just, like, now it's turning into, like, elementary school, insults. Like,
he's like, "I'm gonna beat the shit out of you and CJ McCollum. I got you. I got both y'all one-on-two. Like,
I mean, like, probably.
Yeah, you're not wrong, probably. But...
Dude, Shaq could take on, like, a room of 30. Like...
Oh, for sure.
No
he's
question.
A couch. He's an absolute unit. He's an absolute unit.
If Shaq pulls up to Amherst, like, we need, like, 12 security guards for real, though. Because, like, that's an L for us. I'm just gonna
That's
get
an L for us.
But I would also, I think I would say Dame, I think Shaq, the one thing he did have, I think he went more like factual. I think Dame has a lot of bars in there that are tough, but then if you like go back and he says like, I would trade Penny for Shaq, you're capping.
Yeah, you're capping.
You know what I mean? But like in terms of the similes, like sure, he was definitely rapping better than Shaq. I'll say that. How do we feel about athletes making diss tracks? I'll start there, and then we'll go more into general about diss tracks.
I feel like first of all, it's fun because athletes are the most like competitive people on the planet.
Right.
Okay. And then also, I feel like rappers are super competitive. I mean, they're always trying to outdo each other with jewelry, cars, flows. So like, when you get like somebody who's like the apex of that, like Damian Lillard, who's a legitimate rapper and also like an ultimate competitor, somebody like Lonzo even, or somebody like Marvin Bagley, or really any of them, I think it's just fun.
Yeah.
Because so many people, definitely. I think it's just fun. If anybody was like coming at, if any of the athletes started coming at like a real, real rapper, like
it's probably
like,
over.
Like, when at Big Sean or when at M or when at like, I'd be like, there's lanes and levels. Right. But like, no, I like it. I think it's fun.
Yeah, what do you think, Trevor?
Yeah, I'm going to agree. I also like it a lot, and I hope we see more of it. Like, I hope this kind of, like, sparks, like, a lot more guys to get involved. Like, what if we see, like, just a magic, like, mystery Lonzo diss track just come out of nowhere? Like, he disses the Lakers or something like that, big baller.
Band. I mean, he had a diss track towards Kyle Kuzma. Yeah. I forgot about that one. That one was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, like, inner team, though. I need to see, like, super – I mean, we're in the age of duos now. I need to see, like – a Paul George, Kawhi Leonard collab.
Collab versus Bron and AD.
If Kawhi Leonard hopped on a track, I would pay you like...
What it do, baby?
I would pay your tuition if Kawhi Leonard was like, f*** it, I'm
hopping
on the track.
I'll send the invoice.
But now we can kind of move on to more general. So like, how do we feel about diss tracks in 2019? Like, are they still... Do you feel like they're still necessary? Do they still make an impact? What do you guys think?
I don't think they... Go ahead. You guys.
I was just going to say, I don't think they make the same impact as they did like years, because like, I think one of the most prominent diss tracks I can think of is No Vaseline, Ice Cube's diss track. Yeah, I love that diss track, bro. That was crazy. And that was like a pivotal diss track because like that was like his exit from the group, and like the group was trying to reform. They're going through a lot of business changes. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, I think the last, I mean, Back to Back was crazy. Drake's diss.
The Story of Adidon?
But no, that's where I was going.
Okay, my bad. My bad. I jumped the gun. My fault.
I have not heard a diss track like The Story of Adidon in years.
Yeah, that was, bro. That was something special in terms of how much, like, I guess it exposed. Well, I think obviously, you know, the lines that exposed.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there was also a lot of lines that Drake already kind of has said in his music, but that was one of the most vicious ones of the decade.
Vicious. And like, dude, he made fun of his friend for having multiple sclerosis.
He didn't give a
He left it all on the table, and even said, he was like, yo, Drake, like, everything's on the table, bro. Like, if you can, and Drake, there's that rumor going around, Drake was trying to, like, scrum up money to, like, try to get dirt on Pusha T, like.
Yeah.
But my thing is, in terms of impact, like, think about it. That diss track that happened.
It didn't do anything.
Drake still goes ahead, drops Scorpion, it still goes number one.
Yeah.
And people aren't even talking about the whole idea of, like, you know, him hiding a son. That's kind of just
nobody
done
cares.
And over.
Yeah, right.
Well, one thing I think about diss tracks now is one thing they didn't used to do is bring the person getting crapped on a lot of publicity. Like, they didn't do that because social media was different. When somebody got crapped on, like,
you heard
labels decided, are we going to work with this dude? Are we going to promote his music anymore? Because this label doesn't want to do it, and this radio station doesn't want to spin it. It's not like that anymore. Now it's all over social media.
Yeah.
If Drake is getting dissed for having a kid, his name is everywhere. Then he drops Scorpion. Of course he's going number one. His name is everywhere.
Right.
So I think that's a thing that's happened. And then also, like, just with disses in general, like, I think a lot of it more is now having to do with, like, clout chasing than anything.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Mm. Tory Lanez is, like, notorious.
Yeah, Tory Lanez, and the Tory Lanez and Joyner thing, all market. Yeah. All marketing.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything about that since.
Because they're friends.
They were going back and forth for weeks, and then they did songs together, and it was like, what was the point of
Eminem
this?
And MGK drop diss tracks last year?
Those were crazy. Those were crazy.
I totally just forgot about that. I, like, just remembered that.
I was like, when it happened, like, I think the diss tracks were solid, but it was just like, I didn't care about the beef, if that makes sense.
MGK is
obviously, he grew he's up MGK. A fan of Eminem,
yeah.
And he's never going to be as big as Eminem.
Yeah, some punk getting mad at his father.
Yeah, pretty much. That's exactly what that beef was. It was actually pretty funny. Chris, would you ever make a diss track? What would it take for you to make a diss track?
For me to make a diss track, somebody would have to, like, really either just want to have some fun, because I'm always down for, like, some fun. But if somebody, like, to piss me off, you would have to come at, like, oh, bro, I don't even know. You would really have to come at me in, like, the craziest way, talking about, like, my family or, like, just something to really actually piss me off and get me into that gear. Because if somebody says my music sucks, like, I don't care. Like, okay.
Right.
But, like, I don't, so, no, I don't think, like, I can't foresee a situation where I would ever drop a diss track, except for fun.
Yeah. I mean, what if someone drops one at you? I feel like you have
Then, no, because then it's that, then it's competition. Like, right. somebody drops a diss track at me and it's valid and they're somebody, I'm shooting back.
Yeah. Like, so if it was like, let's say it's a clout chaser, you probably wouldn't.
No, no. If it's somebody who's like trying to bite off me, then no. I'll just leave it be. I'll be like, good job. That was nice.
Good,
that
good
was,
for you.
That was cute.
Tweets back at
that was cute.
Comments on the
everybody
on the
look at this.
Link.
Everybody look at this.
Yeah.
I'd put them on. I don't care.
Yeah. My next question, what makes a good diss track? Is it, you know, the disrespectfulness? Is it the honesty and facts in it where you can fact check it? Is it the flows? What is it?
I feel like...
No, go ahead, Chris.
I feel like you got to come... There's like two things that can... There's three different ways you can really make a diss track. One, you can keep people entertained because it's funny. Okay, mm-hmm. So you can just keep clowning somebody and it'll be entertaining enough to where it's really funny.
Yeah.
The other is like the story of Adenon type thing where it's just like facts.
Exposed.
To the point where you paint somebody in a corner and they don't have anywhere to go. Or you can kind of do like kind of what I feel like everybody does now where they compare bank accounts.
Yeah, I think that's so lazy. And I'm glad that Dame and this beef, like, he checked that at the door real quick.
Yeah.
Because it's just, like, it's super lazy to talk about the money. We all know, like, you have money. Like, everybody's got money. So what's the point of us comparing? Like, once you have over $1 million.
Yeah, y'all
like,
all have more than me, like, so none of us care.
Right, right. And what would you say, Trevor, what would you say?
I was, like, piggybacking off the story of Adenon example. It's like... You had a lot of people saying that, like, Drake's... Because he dropped Duppy Freestyle before Story of Adenon. And you had a lot of people saying that that was a better, like, song, where Story of Adenon was a much better diss track.
Yeah.
And I think, like, a truly great diss track combines both of that.
Yeah.
Like, where it's, like, it's the elements of, like, a great song, like, back-to-back. Like, back-to-back to me is, like, such a prime example of a diss track because... It's disrespectful as hell.
And it's catchy, bro. And you know
it was
on at the club.
Yeah, like, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You are playing that at like parties, at clubs. Like, you are playing that everywhere. Nobody's playing Duppy Freestyle at the club. Nobody's playing Story. If I heard Story of Adenon out at a party, I'd be like, respect, but like, not the time. not the time or the place, you know? But like, back to back is like such a great example, I think, of like that like prime diss track. Because it's all the elements of like a great song, and it's also like a diss track.
Right. Yeah, for me, I don't know what it is. Because I think there's, as you said, Chris, there's multiple ways to do it. I think, like, the disrespect, like, there's times, like, with Tupac, with Hit 'Em Up, where it's, like, that song, in terms of, like, him rapping, it wasn't anything special, but it was hella disrespectful, especially the intros and the outros.
First off, that's why I fucked your claim. Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's why I fucked your dick. Like, to, off the jump to say that, like, there's nothing you can really...
You fat motherfucker.
Yeah, it's just so disrespectful. Then in the outro, he's talking about Mobb Deep, and this is the first time I realized, like, with the Drake Story of Adenon thing with 40, I was like, there's no rules in this. When Pac went and said, that's why one of you got sickle cell anemia, right? Like, once you go there, I think Prodigy had sickle cell anemia, and he went there with that. Like, once he went there, I was like, anybody could do that. So that's one way you could do it.
Yeah.
Then there's obviously the fact checking. I love Hove on the Takeover when he was going at everybody. He has like this one section for Nas, and he talks about like how Nas only had one classic at the time. Like, he breaks it down like number by number. He's like, yo, you had Illmatic, that's a classic, and then all the other ones were okay in like an 8-year span. And I was like,
he's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong. And it's like, that's a tough way to really argue it. But if I had to choose, I think the factual is more important than the disrespect, but I can see kind of both sides. And if you can blend both, I think that's when you got the best the best diss track.
Totally agree.
What makes a bad diss track?
Oh, was that an actual Meek diss track that he had to back to back? Like, was that his response? I forget what it was called.
So Meek, before he dropped, what's it called?
Well, because it was Charged Up, and then
Meek dropped One or No. And that one, I didn't like it. I remember it had like the Undertaker's like music in it.
Right.
It has the music in it. It wasn't anything like special. The only thing I remember about that song is in the outro, Meek said something about how Drake got pissed on in a movie theater, and I was like,
pause.
What?
Pause.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Pause. That's what I'm saying. Like, we still have not gotten an explanation about that. But yeah, that track, I guess if it's forgettable, would you say that's
forgettable? And like, sometimes I feel like say you like somebody writes or like delivers a diss track about you, like, do you have to respond? I feel like sometimes like you don't have to respond. I feel like those are the worst diss tracks are often in response. Because yeah. This is the way I think about the story of Adidon was Pusha had that written for months, if not years. Yeah. Like, and he totally baited Drake into his trap and he got him. So I'm thinking like if Drake dropped a response to Story of Adidon, I don't think it would have been good. Like they say like, oh, like it would have ended like Kanye's career. Like that's about Kanye. That's not about Pusha.
Yeah.
Like, so that's, I think, another element too is like you're losing the scope of your diss track. Like, who are you actually dissing? Which, like, that was an argument about Duppy Freestyle too, is like where people were like, well, he's really only dissing Kanye for like spilling your
Yeah.
Which, like, no matter how true that is, like, this is supposed to be about Pusha. You know, right, this isn't about Kanye. Right. So I think if you lose scope and if it's like not really worth pursuing,
yeah.
Like, why are you even going to put the diss track out?
Right.
So,
like, Joe Budden, he put out like, I think he put out like 12 diss tracks towards Drake. And Drake didn't respond once. All Drake did was he put out No Shopping. He said, pump, pump, pump it up. And that was literally it. That was it. Nothing else. But what do you think, Chris? What's a bad diss track?
I think what makes a bad diss track is kind of going off what you said, when you lose the scope. Mm. And also, like, I thought Duppy was actually, I thought it was bad because. And also the second Shaq track, I think, is bad because, like, if you sound butthurt, truly butthurt, and you're like, no, Kanye told Pusha everything, and that's the only way he knows that, it's like, you sour motherfucker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right, so I think if you sound butthurt, I think that kind of, like, you lose.
100%. Yeah, I think especially in today's climate with, like, social media and everything, it's whoever is the most salty, like, that's the loser.
Like, if you're mad.
100%.
Yeah, you gotta make it seem 100%. Like you're not mad, which is not an easy thing to do. Like, yeah. I don't blame these rappers that, like, even Shaq. I don't blame someone that gets mad when you, like, you lose something. Like, where if someone comes at your life, you're gonna feel salty. So, like, I think it's a skill to hide that. So, compliments to any rappers that can continue to fire back and not seem salty, because that definitely does not seem easy. Next question I got for you guys: what would you guys say is, what's the greatest diss track of all time in you guys' eyes? I know you said No Vaseline.
No Vaseline. Yep.
You can't really argue another one, but I can't argue another one besides No Vaseline because of the impact it had. Like, I would say my favorite one to listen to is Back to Back.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just because, first of all, now I like Meek. I used to hate Meek, so when that came out, I was bumping it.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, this is heavy rotation.
Right.
And then also, like, but, like, in terms of impact and, like, what was said, No Vaseline's the greatest diss track ever written. There's no real argument to that.
Yeah.
No Ether picks?
I was going to say Ether's up there, definitely.
I don't like Ether because I think it goes to that disrespectful rap where you're not even saying anything factual.
You're just plainly being disrespectful. Yeah, like, I know what you mean.
Once I heard dick sucking lips out of Nas's mouth, I was like, all right, this is not the diss track for me. Like, where you're just trying to come at another man's physical appearance.
Yeah.
I don't know about all that. That's just my opinion.
Also, who did M diss? M diss somebody crazy. It was he said his daughter's name on a song. He just got all of his friends on this one song. Started with CH. That's all I know. It was crazy. I forget who it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Eminem has dropped some of the best diss tracks of all time.
Okay. I would also throw this in there. I don't know if it counts the diss track. It's kind of a lot of name dropping, but 50 Cent, How to Rob. Like, that pretty much started his career off of just saying, like, he's going to rob all these rappers that are big because he's not really big yet. And that literally started the whole troll persona that kind of made him big. So, like, that's something that I would just mention. But I don't know if that technically qualifies as a diss track.
Can I ask you, like, an actual question?
Yes, sir.
Do you consider 1985 a diss track?
I would say no because there's no clear target. People can say it's Lil Pump, they can say it's Smoke Perp, but I think it was more like,
I think it's just a statement.
I think it's so clearly targeted at those two because he, like, mentioned how he heard that they were playing with his name in a circle.
But the thing is, he went and had an interview with Lil Pump. Like, they did a one-on-one conversation after it. So that's why I couldn't feel it as, like, a diss track.
Yeah, I didn't think it was disrespecting. I think he was trying to, like, move the culture off something, which was the
whole
point of that album.
Right. I agree wholeheartedly. But let's move on to Ankle Breaks.
Ankle Breaks. All right, ladies and gentlemen. So, for those of you that are new, this is the basketball side of the show. Today, we're going to be going over preseason, some first impressions, players that have stood out to us, And then we'll dive into this really complicated NBA in China situation. And by all means, is it complicated?
I heard Daryl Morey's writing a diss track, and then China's responding. That's what I heard. But like, we'll see. We'll see.
Could you imagine, bro?
The Chinese government, they about to hit like a whole cipher, like all 12 dudes in the booth.
What if instead of wars, like, we just drop diss tracks for each other? Like,
honestly, that might be the wave, because there's a lot of people that die that don't deserve to die because of the government. So that might be the new wave. Kim Jong-un, come get this fade on the mic. Yeah. Honestly, that's the new wave.
Kerm 2020. Make America rap again. But so, starting off our discussion, we'll go right into the preseason. So preseason, as some of you may know, or hopefully all of you know, started last week, last Friday. The Rockets played the Clippers, and the Lakers played the Warriors. Pretty eventful night overall. Or that was on Saturday, actually, yeah, Lakers and Warriors. But NBA's back. Basketball's back.
Mm-hmm.
Feels good. Can't wait for the 22nd. It couldn't come any sooner. But let's jump in. I'll just jump in right away with first impressions from our favorite teams. Kerm, I'm sure you're feeling some type of way about the Lakers.
Oh, man. I feel great.
What do you feel great about?
I feel great the fact that, like, I really just want to look every Celtics fan in the eye and just say, F-
really? That's what you that's right what you want to do? I'm right here. That's what you want to do?
Yo. Pat, are you a Celtics fan?
Yes, I am.
Yo, Pat, I love you, dog, but
Zach, bro.
Damn.
Because, you know, there was a lot of hate going on. You know, a lot of jokes that have been fired off in the past year. And understandable, you know, the Lakers were in a tough spot, you know. We had LeBron, and we still were in the lottery. And I get it, you know, I get the humor. You know, we were talking about trades for AD, and it didn't happen during the season. But now we got him, all right? 22 in the first half. Like, don't put anything on me. I know it's preseason, and I know it's preseason, and you know, the Warriors don't really have a center, but that lineup's looking kind of unguardable. I'm just going to keep it a buck.
That Bron pick and roll with AD is going to be unstoppable.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
That's literally unstoppable.
Pick and choose. Yeah. And that's not even the most impressive thing to me that stood out, because I knew that like, everyone knows, like, with LeBron and AD, they're just, like, literally symbiotic in terms of, like, how they match with each other.
Right.
But the fact that, like, on defense, they have the potential to be elite with JaVale McGee and AD protecting the rim. Then you just have these elite defenders besides LeBron. LeBron, I will admit, is not an elite defender anymore.
Not anymore. Not even close to it.
I don't think he tries enough to become elite.
Right.
But then you got Avery Bradley, Danny Green. Avery Bradley was
best on-ball defender besides Marcus Smart in the NBA.
Patrick Beverley's up there, too, but we can talk about that. But Avery Bradley was in Steph Curry's from the jump. Like, no one, him and Patrick Beverley and Marcus Smart, I think those are probably the three guys that try the most on defense. Let's say it that way. I don't know if you can say they're 100% the best, because you got Kawhi, you got Paul George as well, who can guard bigger guys. But, like, in terms of their effort, it's ridiculous. So, like, I'm looking forward to that. And then once Kuzma comes back, if he comes off the bench, I think we're set. But I'm not going to jump the gun. I know it's been one preseason game. What about you guys?
Still impressive, though, against the Warriors, no less. Like, I mean, sure, they're like the gutted Warriors, but like...
Are they gutted?
Not really.
Are they gutted? They lose KD, and it's everybody's like, they're gutted. But D'Angelo Russell, that's
a legit... Yeah, no, he's a great pickup.
6'8"? What is he? 6'9"? Oh, 6'8", 6'9". I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think the Warriors are still legit. I think a lot of people are really underestimating them, because, I mean, when Klay comes back too, like, I really hope Klay comes back healthy and, like, the same.
Yes.
Because I love watching Klay play, and, like, when they're all together, like, that core of three shooters right there is going to be insane to watch. Like,
I will say, until Klay comes back, though, I'm going to look forward to watching D'Lo and Steph try and play some defense.
Yeah.
That's going to be real entertaining. But what are you guys thinking about the Celtics? You know, I got my moment in.
Yeah, so they played the Hornets.
Yeah.
I think it was two nights ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, I'll let you take it away first. What stood out to you most about this new Celtics team?
I mean, with the Celtics right now, I think you have to look a lot about, like, the most important thing is chemistry. Because last year, that was their biggest issue, and it looks great.
Yeah.
Like, so far, it looks really great. Everybody's laughing. Everybody enjoys being around each other.
It's early.
I think it's super early.
Yeah, we said the same thing about Kyrie last year, too. Like, I mean, we all jumped the gun. We was like, I'm planning on re-signing here next year.
Right.
Yeah, everyone was going crazy. Yeah. But, I mean, it is really encouraging. I mean, they all love the rookies. Yeah. The rookies have a lot of good things to say about the older guys also.
Yeah. I really liked how Hayward looked. He missed a couple layups early on. But it was like the fact that he was getting there. Right. In terms of like he looked like he was, you know, back to being explosive.
His shot looks great.
100%. Yeah.
His shot looks great.
Definitely. Yeah. Hayward is, I think, such a huge X factor for this team this year too. Like whether or not he shows up. Like I don't expect anything crazy. Like I don't expect him to be like back in like Utah form, like, but I'm hoping he'll get like upwards of like 15, like 16 a game. And as long as I see that he's like driving to the basket, because that was so infuriating about him last year, was just he was passing up open looks. And when he drove, like, obviously you're a little bit cautious going up after the injury that he suffered, but he just didn't have that same tenacity that he had on the Jazz. And, like, I think that first game, this first game was, like, huge to see him like that.
I really like that rookie on the Celtics, Jonathan, I forget his last name. Short dude, he's like 5'11", 5'10".
Dreads?
Yeah.
Little Dreads, what's his name? Carson Edwards.
Carson Edwards. Why did I say Jonathan?
Carson Edwards.
I swear, someone told me there was a Jonathan there, but whatever. Ignore what I just said.
He's a certified bucket.
Yeah, I really liked watching him play. I actually didn't get to see Taco play. I didn't watch
Taco,
the whole game.
So Taco played well.
Yeah, he did.
He showed up.
Yeah, he had a putback. He had some blocks.
He had two blocks. Maybe, actually, four. Didn't he have four?
Did he finish with four?
He might have finished with four.
I saw two. I remember seeing two.
Also, they started the Time Lord. How'd you guys feel about that?
He needs to play this year.
I have such an affinity for Robert Williams.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I love that kid, and I believe in him so much. Like, I really – he just has this crazy athleticism. Yep. Yeah. And if he utilizes that, if he gets his basketball IQ up a little bit, he's going to be a legitimate threat.
Once they released Baynes this year and bought him out, I was like, the time was he's going to play.
He's got to play.
One thing I was saying over the summer to pretty much any Celtics fan to make them feel bad, I was like – Kemba Walker and his cancer pick and roll defense is literally just like that's chop suey. So I think with Williams like that, he's at least like a more legitimate defender. Yeah, and you know that's true.
And his cancer sucks defense. And he's Kemba's bad. Like he can't.
Kemba's just undersized, so Kemba's gonna get killed on every pick.
We saw it in the Hornets game. Yeah. He's gonna get killed on every pick.
Yeah, that's how it's gonna be all season. So it really depends on that big man that's gonna have to make those switches. So I think with Williams, you have a better chance of that.
Definitely.
Any other teams we want to talk about? I definitely want to talk about the Pelicans.
Yeah, I think we got
to
talk about
the league pass finals were on. The Hawks and the Pelicans.
Did y'all know Alex Glenn could shoot threes?
No.
I did not know.
No, that was surprising.
That's got to be new. Yeah. That's got to be new.
I'll admit, like the Hawks last year, I know they became like a league pass favorite in the second half of the season. I wasn't watching them. They weren't making the playoffs. I didn't care.
Yeah.
So I wasn't watching, but Alex Glenn, that was one thing that stood out to me. 2 3-pointers made from Alex Glenn. That game was honestly very entertaining.
Very fun.
You guys saw Trae Young nutmeg JJ Redick real bad.
that was crazy.
I love Trae Young.
I think the biggest standout of that game for me, like I know everyone's gonna say Zion, but Lonzo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know Lakers fan bias, whatever, but Lonzo looked like even better than last year, and I think he was underrated last year, but. In terms of like his shot, he changed his form. You can see the difference.
Yep. It's above the release is above the head.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hit that last year. That was his signature step back. He's been had that move, but like to see him, you know, hit that clean one early, I'd love to see that. Floor general for sure. I just think the Pelicans, like maybe I'm overreacting because it was the Hawks, but they could sneak into an 8th spot. Like
what'd you guys think about Brandon Ingram?
Ingram is going to be what
that
he
was,
is.
That was disappointing, I thought.
It was, and I don't know. Like, I was saying this to one of my roommates. I was like, dude, I just don't know how it's going to work out with Brandon Ingram.
Well,
like,
I think he's a free agent after this year. Yeah. So I think there's a good chance he ends up walking unless they give him a ridiculous extension he wasn't expecting. But with Ingram, it's like his game just doesn't like cater itself to efficiency, if that makes sense. Where it's like when all your best weapon, I guess, is your mid-range jumper, and then your second best weapon is the fact that you're lengthy, like because every drive he has, he gets bodied, but he'll make, I'd say, like 45 to 50% of his layups off of just being tall as it's like he always gets bodied, and they never look pretty. Like, there's never
it's ugly.
Ingram drive that I was like, damn, that was a dope drive. It's always like he gets, like, brutalized, struggle, and then hopefully he makes it.
I think he banged on KD last year once, and that looked clean. Yeah. But other than that, I'd say you're right.
It's tough for him in terms of, like, the driving. At least it looks that way. I don't want to disrespect Brandon Ingram. He's obviously getting buckets, so what do I know? But it looks tough. But I think overall that team's just scary. Jrue Holiday is
their
franchise player.
Yeah.
He's in his prime. I think he's gonna be a great leader for them. Reddick is the perfect team needs a JJ Reddick. Yeah. So I think he's gonna be perfect for him. Who's the big man they had? His name, Melly or whatever, that was off the bench.
Oh yeah,
he caught my attention. One, he looks like a caveman.
He had some good passes. He got some good looks too.
A couple good decisions there. He definitely had me at least interested. I didn't know who that was. So like that's a player that caught my eye. Has there been any other preseason games that you guys happen to watch?
You can't ignore Zion.
You cannot. We really
but did, no, really, really, because like everybody been talking, he's gonna be the greatest, he's gonna be the biggest thing. Bro, Lonzo is more impressive than him. I mean, he's a good rookie, he's a freak athlete, but I'm just wondering, like, do you need that mid-range jump shot? Yeah. Do you need those things to make serious impacts on the NBA game? It's looking like athleticism isn't just gonna carry him.
Yeah, but I think he did have a good debut. I think SportsCenter and Bleacher Report are going to gas him all year, regardless of how good he is.
Because that's because it's the market.
He's going to have those dunks. But one thing you got to say, he's like the athleticism still translates.
Yeah.
Because I thought with his height, they measured him at 6'6 last week. I was literally talking in my fantasy basketball draft. My friend Devontae, he drafted Zion. Yeah. I was like, bro, I don't know. With that height, like, he might struggle. But he looked comfortable.
He's still jumping out of shoes.
He didn't dominate the game per se, but he still looked a lot more comfortable than I expected for someone that relies so much on athleticism. And obviously,
and size,
he jumped to another level where the guys are bigger now. The guys are not as athletic as him, but a lot closer than what you're dealing with in the NCAA. But the Pelicans got some potential.
I think he's still one of the heaviest players in the league, though. Is he?
285. Yeah. I don't know where that stands, like, in terms of everybody else, but
he's got.
I don't even know what Taco Fall is. He's like close to 285. Yeah,
I think we need to monitor Zion's weight because he's got serious Shaq potential. By the age of 28, we're gonna be looking at Zion, and he's not gonna be as explosive just because he might just put on some weight.
And he's only 6'6". Shaq was 7 feet tall. Right, yeah. Like, Shaq could get away with that.
Right. When you go into the league like as big as he is already, you're only going to get bigger. Depending on his diet, maybe he's going to monitor that himself and he'll be fine. But I think that's something to at least look out for. And not this season or even the next 5 years. But once he starts hitting that age where, you know, your metabolism starts slowing down, that's something to at least look at.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked it up. He's 40 pounds heavier than the average NBA player.
Jesus Christ.
Than the average?
You said he was 285, right?
Yeah.
The average NBA player is 246.9 pounds.
That's crazy.
So he's out here. He's really going to be out here bodying people for a minute at least.
Yep, for sure. Any other teams we watched? I didn't watch the Clippers per se, but I did see clips of Patrick Beverley guarding James Harden full court because he's a psycho. But have you guys been watching?
I didn't watch the game, but I saw some rather encouraging Markelle Fultz highlights. Bro, his jumper looks a lot cleaner. I think it's just he's found an environment that he can work in. Like, the Sixers, I just don't think was, like, that wasn't a good starting point
for him. Too much media there, for sure.
He was playing great defense. He had a couple good steals. He had this one nice dunk off a breakaway, too. He looks a lot better. Looks, like, back to his college self where he's getting to the rim a lot. But I really hope he blows up this year.
Yeah. We'll see if it translates to the regular season.
Because, I mean, boy, watching him shoot free throws, that was tough.
Anything else before we move on to NBA versus China?
No, we should move on to NBA versus China.
All right. Lead us off, Trevor.
All right, so some international ankle breaks news for you. That's right, 808's ankle breaks going international. So this past week has been pretty crazy for Rockets GM Daryl Morey and the NBA in general. So some background on this situation. So since June, it's been a pretty widely addressed, like, geopolitical event. Is there have been these protests erupting in Hong Kong over legislation that would allow the Chinese government to extradite, which, for those of you who don't know what extradite means, that means extradite is they have to hand over criminals located in other countries back to the original country the crime was committed in. So, like, somebody committed a crime in, like, the USA, they moved to France, and we extradited them, that would mean bringing them back to the US to try them. But, so that's what the legislation would allow the Chinese government to extradite people who they deem criminals in the Hong Kong territory. And this has been a big problem for a lot of people in Hong Kong because Hong Kong is an autonomous nation. They are separate from China, and a lot of people believe that this would give the Chinese government a lot more control over Hong Kong and its people, meaning that they would be under their jurisdiction. So these protests have been going on since June. They've been going up and down. You know, I'm sure you guys have seen the pictures of people in the airports. There's been some violence, of course. People have died from these protests, too. But it's just been this crazy geopolitical event. A lot of people are talking about it lately, and especially because Rockets GM Daryl Morey sent out a tweet in support of the protesters. And this was a big no-no for China. They did not like this at all, as you can imagine.
Do you have the exact tweet in front of you, by chance?
So the Daryl Morey tweet was just a photo that says, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong," and had like a little logo on it.
Yeah, and so obviously China was not happy about this. China is not a democratic nation the way that the United States is. They don't really allow free speech the way the United States does. So Adam Silver spoke in a press conference in which he stated his support for Morey's right to free speech, kind of taking, I guess, an apolitical stance, but he is kind of taking the stance of like he can say whatever he wants to say because obviously in the United States, you have the right to free speech. And the Chinese government was not happy, and the state TV issued a statement saying that they were strongly unsatisfied and opposed to Adam Silver's support of Daryl Morey's right to free speech, which is pretty crazy. But even Rockets superstar James Harden got involved. He, during, I think it was an after practice press conference. He apologized. He essentially said that we apologize. We love our fans in China. And he continued to discuss the relationship between the Rockets and China for a little bit.
And was this before or after the China? Like, they pulled out of something.
They pulled out of quite a few things. So okay. I'll get there. Okay. But I'm sure this is like during, because all of this is still like very new, very current, and it's still ongoing. So as we know, China is a major international partner of the NBA and especially of the Rockets. The nation has already begun withdrawing coverage of preseason games, community events involving the NBA, sponsorships, partnerships like the Chinese Basketball Association, and more. Chinese celebrities are going to begin boycotting NBA China games. This Chinese TV network Tencent, with whom the NBA has a $1.5 billion streaming deal with, is blacklisting the Rockets games, and Rockets merchandise has now disappeared from retail stores throughout China.
Wow.
That's big money.
So this is all the latest is, you know, China's just pulling everything off the shelves related to the Rockets, and it seems like they are just severing all business ties at the moment. So, first question, does this seem to be a bigger problem for the Rockets or for the NBA?
That's tough. I would say the Rockets, just because like it's immediately affecting their pockets.
Right.
I think it's definitely still not a good sign for the NBA with what Adam Silver said, which what he said was not wrong at all.
That, yeah.
You know, our country has a right to free speech.
Yeah, and it's not like he took a hard stance on like the issue going in Hong Kong either. He was just saying like, this is America. Like he can say what he wants to say, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, as the Rockets, I can't think of an international partner that any other NBA team has that is as big as China is to the Rockets.
No, it's huge.
You know?
It's Yao absolutely Ming, huge.
I'm assuming plays a big part in that.
What?
Yao Ming, I'm assuming.
Oh, plays a big part in that. 100%. 100%. But Chris, what do you think? Do you think this is more Rockets, more NBA? Is it both?
So with the NBA, I mean, it's such a big, there's a ton of teams, and I don't think it's realistic that a whole populace and a whole government is going to be able to shut down and make that whole like platform not a thing in China.
Right.
But with Houston, I mean, the issue is, like you said, China's like a really big part of their market. I mean, they have jerseys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm pretty sure they also like recognize Chinese New Year too.
They do.
When that comes
around.
This
is like a whole big thing, which is why you have their superstar issuing a statement. They're like, well, this is it already is hurting their pockets.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the league isn't pleased with them like behind closed doors because, okay, a $1.5 billion streaming deal with our biggest team blacklisted, like that's not a good look.
Yeah, like right off the bat, less people in China are inclined to watch.
Right.
I don't know anything about the people of China. I don't know which NBA teams they support, but I imagine that if you have a deal as lucrative as that is with the Rockets, I imagine your biggest fan base internationally is going to be in China.
Yeah.
The Rockets.
Yeah.
But going back to what you said, like James Harden, he issued that statement. He's actually come under a lot of scrutiny for apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you guys think about that? Do you think he's in the right for apologizing? Is he wrong? Should he take a harder stance?
Well, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, the Rockets told him to apologize.
To say that? Like, right.
I couldn't see a franchise player coming out like that and really trying to, like, defend a whole country that he right. never has lived in.
Yeah.
I feel like that seems like something that, like, the bigwigs would ask him to do. But also, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe James Harden really loves Chinese culture and he really wanted to say it. I don't know.
I mean, they go there a lot. I mean, in his statement, they yeah. said that they go there quite a right. bit to do events and stuff, but which they will not be doing anymore. Yeah. So
right. I don't know how to feel about it. I think, well, once again, and when it comes to free speech, there's free speech. So I'm not going to get mad at James for saying that per se. But what do you think, Chris?
I think as, like, the face of a franchise, you become, like,
You
become the franchise. You're responsible for communicating. So even, like, over the GM, like, you remember in Boston, if Kyrie said something, that was Boston. It's not what Danny Ainge said.
Yeah.
So, like, when you have James Harden saying that, it kind of, in one sense, it can kind of pit him against the GM, GM in a bad way. But also, I mean, it's tough because you have to play politics, right? So you're a basketball player, whatever his personal stance on it, maybe he can't vocalize it. So right. like, people come at him for, like, oh, you're siding this way and that way on a human rights issue. But it's like, yeah, but he's also playing politics and you can't really be mad. And like you said, the free speech, so like, people getting all bent out of shape about it.
It's like, yeah, and I think it's especially unique, too, because I think more so than any other sports league that I can think of, the NBA is the most socially conscious of those. Like, they're always addressing these issues. So it's really interesting to see this come into play, even though it's not a domestic issue, it's an international issue. But what do you guys think about Adam Silver? Like, do you guys think that he did the right thing?
I think Adam Silver definitely did the right thing. And I think Adam Silver continues to do the right thing. Yeah. He always seems to just side with what seems like the right thing.
His common sense. You know what I mean?
He's not going to try and be David Stern where he, like, is trying to, like, shut things down. He's all for free speech where, you know, where it comes to either the players or the owners or the GM. Right. So he's kind of just stuck on brand with this.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I mean, I think he's always been on the ball when it comes to this kind of stuff. And I honestly love Adam Silver.
Yeah, me too. I think he's a great commissioner.
Great commissioner. 100%. I think one of, like, probably the best commissioner right now.
I'll agree. Yeah. I think that one of the important things that he did there and that he continues to do in every public issue, seemingly besides the Donald Sterling one in Los Angeles, because issue that happened a while back.
Yeah.
Because I think he's just very morally guided and he lets morals, like, define its decisions rather than business or anything like that.
Right.
But I also really like how he generally takes the side of the people that work for him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, or work with him, his colleagues, etc. So, like, he backed his GM in that situation. I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're trying to keep a league under your control, that's why the NFL looks like it looks, because people do not like Roger Goodell, because he's not acting in the interest of the people he works with.
Yeah. It's also the dynamics of the league, too. Like, the NFL is very much an owner's league, whereas the NBA is very much a player's league.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like, in the NBA, if you request a trade, you usually go, like, where you'd like to go, but if you're in the NFL, they ship you to, like, Buffalo or something. Yeah, Cleveland. Like, they ship you somewhere where you're, like, your career's gonna die.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely an important distinction to make, and I totally agree. I think Adam Silver is right on top of this. I think he addressed it correctly, and, you know, they will suffer a lot of business losses because of this, but I think ultimately the NBA has always been on the right side of history when it comes to social changes like this.
Also, in terms of the business thing, like, I don't know, this is still going to be NBA on Christmas
Day. Yeah, exactly.
Like, they'll get their money. Yeah. they'll get their money.
The bag regardless at this point.
But it's very much, like, still not going to hurt the American audience, but I mean, think about how big China is.
No, yeah,
China,
that's facts. Like, it's a billion people.
So, I mean, and you got to think, how many of those people are, like, potentially Rockets fans, you know?
Huge,
so that's a huge part of their market that could potentially be missing, or will be missing if they blacklist the games. So, very interesting situation to keep an eye on. We'll update you guys in 2 weeks once we know a little bit more about this, but I'll close it there unless you guys have anything else you want to add.
Chris, you got anything that you want to promote? You want people to look out for shows, anything like that?
Just always be on Spotify, always be on Apple Music looking for new Chris Focus.
What's I'm going to
be
dropping social media? With
you. All right, you can find me on Instagram at Chris Focus Music, and that's just where it's at. I don't use Twitter because I don't like Twitter. Everybody can get at me for that, say I'm not doing it right, and I'll stand by that, and I'll live in, but Instagram where I'm at.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course, anytime. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Be sure to tune in to the Amherst Wired Network for the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast next Thursday. We're swapping every Thursday with them for sports. We also got some new shit coming for you next week. New stuff coming for you next week. Edit that. I'm the co-editor in chief. I can't be cussing like that. But thanks. Thank you for listening, guys. I will see you. I'll see you Monday. EIC Podcast. You'll hear us
again. I'll see you next Thursday.
Yep.
Yeah.
Two Thursdays.
Two Thursdays.
See you guys in two weeks. Peace.